ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
We all sweat. Some of us don't want to admit it, and it's absolutely not a topic that you'd bring up at any old dinner table, but it's part of human biology. And it's important too. How is it controlled? How does our body choose where to sweat from? Well, I wanted to look into this because, and stay with me, it's a little lowbrow, but I promise I rarely deviate from ABC and SBS, but Faith Ward is the first Australian to join the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders. She was headhunted and she was named as one of the rookies in the 36-member squad last year. She is the first member of the team to perform with a ponytail in its 56-year history. Why? She sweats from the head and her hair ends up drenched within minutes. And, oh, I can relate to her so hard. So I thought we'd look into this as a topic. Tell me your sweaty stories, please. 1300 800 222. Christine Layton on Nightlife standing in for Philip Clark. I'm live from WA. And joining me in our studios, I have Dr. Sanjay Sharma from Perth Sweat Clinic. Welcome to Nightlife.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm going to ask you a very personal question. What kind of sweater are you?
Look, I'm sorry to disappoint you. I'm an appropriate sweater. So I sweat when I exercise or when I'm particularly hot, but I don't sweat inappropriately.
Are you sweating now?
No.
Oh, you lucky thing. That's rather unfair. How did you come to be working in this field? Obviously, you are a cardiothoracic surgeon. You do heart and lung surgeries during the day, at night. We're lucky to have you in the studios. But how did you get into this specialty? Tell me.
Look, one of the treatments for inappropriate sweating is a procedure called an endoscopic thoracic sympathectomy, which is basically dividing a nerve that controls sweating, and that nerve happens to live in the chest. So it's part of my territory, and we're very experienced at being in the chest. So that's why I got involved with sweating. But then I realised a lot of people also sweat from other areas, particularly the armpits, and I've done a lot of work and attended conferences in this area, and I think it's a very poorly treated and poorly understood part of medicine.
Often we try to hide our sweat. We don't talk to others about it unless it's a problem. Shall we start with the very basics? Why does our body need to sweat in the first place, Dr. Sharma?
So sweating is basically a means of controlling body temperature. That's its primary use. And when we exercise, we generate a lot of body heat and we have to get rid of that heat. And one of the ways to do that is to evaporate fluid from our skin, which then cools our body down.
How is sweat formed?
So let's imagine that in the skin there's a little gland, the sweat gland. Every sweat gland has a branch of part of the nervous system called the sympathetic nervous system, and one branch goes to that sweat gland. When that nerve fires, it releases a chemical messenger, and that stimulates the nerve to sweat. And sweat is basically salt with a few other bits and pieces in there. So when you exercise, you stimulate the sympathetic nervous system, and that's why you sweat more. But there is a certain percentage of the population that sweat inappropriately.
Inappropriately? How dare you, body? Why are you sweating when you shouldn't? What is the definition of inappropriate sweating?
Okay, so the medical term for inappropriate sweating is called hyperhidrosis, and it's sweating that is not associated with temperature regulation. It is due to increased activity in those nerves, the sympathetic nerves, and it tends to run in families. It can be traced out of a gene on chromosome 14, so it's a very strong genetic component.
Wow, really?
Yes.
Who tends to have this gene?
Look, it can be anybody. It is about 3% of the population, but most people don't talk about it because of the social stigma. I mean, sweat is basically salty fluid. It's not dirty. Mm. It's got that connotation with it, and it is higher in some ethnic groups. The commonest ethnic groups are East Asians, and it can be as high as 5% in the Filipino population.
Wow, in terms of inappropriate sweating.
Yeah.
So when would this sweating occur?
So the definition of hyperhidrosis, you can sweat when you're shivering. And there's two types. There's generalised, which is all over the body, which is generally 20% of people with inappropriate sweating. And then there is focal, which tends to affect particular parts of the body. The commonest parts affected are the hands, feet, the armpits and the face. The sympathetic nervous system also regulates the small blood vessels in the face. So people who blush a lot have basically inappropriate sympathetic activity to the blood vessels in the face. So we sometimes treat people who blush inappropriately.
You are listening to Nightlife with Christine Layton, broadcasting across the country. And in the studios, I have Dr. Sanjay Sharma from Perth Sweat Clinic. He is a cardiothoracic surgeon, among other amazing things. If you have a question for him, send it in on 0467 922 702, and I'll come to those very soon. It's amazing. So hands, feet, armpits and face when it comes to focal hyperhidrosis.
Well said. Well said.
Trying to desperately take some notes. How can this affect somebody's quality of life?
It's actually quite dramatic. It often starts in puberty. And look, kids before the age of 12 don't care. They play and muck around and no one really cares. But when they hit puberty, it often worsens. You become much more conscious. You're aware of your body. I've had stories of children set out of the classroom because they wet paper when they write an exam paper.
Really?
Which is really, really sad.
Oh.
These kids tend to become isolated. They get teased. They get picked on. And you end up with a 20-year-old that's quite withdrawn, doesn't want to interact socially. And unfortunately, whatever job you do in the future to advance your career, you generally have to meet, greet and present. And kids with this condition, if they're offered an opportunity to go to a back office and not deal with people, they would rather go there than meet people and expose themselves to further ridicule. If you do a quality of life survey on these kids, it's got the same effect as having major depression, same effect as having rheumatoid arthritis. They lie about it, thinking about it at night. They plan their day around their sweating. And it can lead to a very limited quality of life.
Hmm. And I guess they probably blame themselves, right?
Yeah, if you don't know, you don't know. And other people blame the poor patient, but it's out of their control. It's in their genetics. They don't have any control of their sympathetic nervous system. It's not associated with poor hygiene. Showering doesn't fix it. I think half the problem is being aware of what the condition is.
Yeah, that is so true. If you've just tuned in, it's Nightlife with Christine Layton. Dr. Sanjay Sharma is with me. We're talking about sweat, and I'd love to hear your stories because I remember being in the back seat of my dad's Volvo and he said to me, "Oh, you stink." And I was like, "What? Do I? Really? What do you mean?" I was 10. I was 10 years old and I hit puberty pretty quickly. Mum went and got me a roll on and we kind of sorted it out. But he kind of said it as if I should know. And you get used to your own smell, don't you?
Well, sweat itself doesn't smell.
Oh.
There's another gland that is mainly concentrated in the armpit and in some people in the groin called the apocrine gland.
Okay.
That is a gland that sits at the bottom of hair follicles and that secretes a protein-rich oil, which doesn't smell. But when it mixes with the sweat, which is just basically salty water, and it's trapped in that warm, moist environment, bacteria can overgrow and digest that oil. It's what's responsible for body odour.
Really?
So it's nothing to do with the sweating.
I've got a text here that says polyester is the worst for sweating because you can't breathe in it, can you?
No. So the sweat accumulates and, gets trapped generally in the armpits.
Yeah.
And that's where body odour comes from. Individually, the hands are very common. Individually, the armpits. Individually, the face and the feet. So it's all the same inappropriate sympathetic activity to those sweat glands. What can you do to treat it? So we've got what we call the conservative options. So we can start from the outside and work down. So on the skin, we can use antiperspirants. The active ingredient in antiperspirant is called aluminium chloride. It's a white powder. It's got nothing specific to do with sweating. It's basically an inflammatory agent. So the theory is if you inflame the skin will swell slightly and pinch the ducts of the sweat glands.
No way.
So in most people, unfortunately for the armpit sweaters, all it does is stains their black shirt white that they're trying to hide the sweat from. It's usually only effective in very mild cases.
So we are essentially aggravating our armpits so we sweat just a little bit less.
Yeah. You're chronically inflaming your – and some people do get skin reactions with long-term use of antiperspirants.
facial sweat can be one of the worst things. Have you ever, maybe you haven't, but on the text line I can see some people have been in meetings, high-pressure meetings, and a drop of sweat comes down the side of your face and the moustache area gets sweaty as well. What is it with the face? Why do certain patches get moist?
So I've had a lot of people with what we call the medical term for this is craniofacial hyperhidrosis or excessive sweating from the head and face. We've treated a lot of people, particularly people in sales. It's amazing what the subconscious cues are that if you're going back and forth and trying to strike a deal with a car salesman, if he starts sweating, people look at them and go, he's hiding something.
Yeah.
What's going on? I've treated a lot of people in sales and a lot of medical students because you have to stand in front of a group of 20 people and present. And that's pretty nerve-wracking, especially when you don't know the answer.
Because it can affect your confidence and it can also affect how you are interpreted.
Yeah, it affects what the other person thinks of you if they see you sweating when it's not that cold,
But sometimes it's fine if you're a personal trainer. Do what you want. If you're a dancer, get into it. It's really quite interesting. There are times when we completely ignore sweat because it's just a byproduct of the activity. But in the office, it's kind of obvious, isn't it?
Just getting back to the treatment, we started with the skin. The next treatment is to try to stop the release of that chemical messenger between the nerves and the sweat glands. And there's two ways of doing that. You can inject Botox into the skin. Botox blocks the release of that chemical messenger. And so it's commonly used in the armpits. It requires repeated application, though.
I was going to ask, how long does it last?
Variable, but most people say about 8 to 12 weeks.
Okay.
We used to do it initially, but we've stopped it because I don't think that's the... people aren't going to do it for the rest of their lives, and it can be expensive. The next option is you can take a tablet, which decreases the production of that chemical transmitter. The problem is that transmitter is not just needed for your sweat glands. It's needed for your eyes, your salivary glands, your bladder, your bowel, and your brain.
Oh.
So if you take it at a high enough dose to control your sweating, it's often associated with blurred vision, dry mouth, bladder and bowel problems. And some evidence it slows your thinking down.
Really?
And makes your memory poor.
Okay. So that's not attractive at all. Right.
And the last option is that you can buy these water baths, particularly for the hands, but it's also used for the feet, fill them up with water and pass quite high-dose electricity through the water with your hands or feet submerged. It's called iontophoresis. We generally have no idea why it works, but in 40% of patients, it seems to improve the sweating.
Really?
Yes, but it is quite time-consuming. It can be required 4 to maybe up to 10 hours a week to have an effect, and nobody's got that sort of time to sit around. If your hands are sitting in water, you can't reach for a remote control, you can't reach your phone, and most people can't maintain that sort of schedule. But there are a few people that buy the machine and manage to control their sweating that way. But generally, my experience is most patients, it ends up in the shed after a few weeks because nobody can do that.
Definitely. And you can't put your face in it, can you? Not recommended?
No.
For 4 hours? No, why not? I don't understand. Sometimes embarrassing topic. Let's say all of the time embarrassing topic. When it comes to surgery, how bad does it need to be for someone to take that next step?
So, look, that's right. So, look, the options, I think surgery is very good in the right person. It's very good for what we call focal palmar or hand hyperhidrosis, and very good for focal head hyperhidrosis and for people who blush a lot. The surgery is done minimally invasively nowadays. It's just a 5 millimeter incision in the armpit. And the basis for the surgery is that in our chest cavity is a long nerve that runs along the ribs called the sympathetic chain. And the sympathetic chain gives rise to all those sympathetic fibers we talked about. We know the sympathetic chain over the second rib supplies nearly all the fibers to the hands and the face, and about 70% of the sympathetic fibers to the feet. So we can do a keyhole procedure, make a little nick in the armpit, put a very fine camera into the chest cavity, identify the second rib, identify that nerve and divide it. It's quite a quick procedure. It takes about 15 to 20 minutes to do both sides, and it's done as a day case. So most people can sort of come in at 6:30 and go home by 1 o'clock. There are the risks associated with any operation, so the small risk of bleeding, small risk of infection. the camera has to go in between the ribs, and underneath each rib runs a nerve called the intercostal nerve, and sometimes the camera can bruise that nerve, and you might be more sore if I bruise it than if I hadn't have bruised it, but that is temporary. And we do a chest x-ray after the case to make sure there's no retained air around the lungs, which is very rare, but if you have got retained air, you may not be able to fly for a few weeks after the surgery. The most unpredictable thing is something called compensatory sweating, or sweating in other parts of the body after the procedure. So a good way to think of it, it's not physiological, but it's a good way to get your head around it, is that you should think of the sympathetic chain like an electrical cable in your chest.
Mm-hmm.
And each rib is a tap letting the electricity out. So there are 12 ribs in the body, so there's 12 taps. People born with this condition, the taps open too much over the second rib. So by me doing the surgery, I turned that tap off. So whatever was going out through there can't go out through there, but it still has to go. And in most people, it equally distributes amongst the other 11 ribs. And most people don't notice anything, or they might have minor increase in sweating in the chest or the back or the legs. But for unknown reasons, it might just come out through three ribs and may not equally distribute. And they can have fairly significant sweating in the chest or the back. They regret having had the surgery.
Oh. Because is it long term?
Once it's also irreversible. So once we cut the nerve, and if people aren't happy, I can't go back and say sorry. I can join it up and get you back to where you were.
Yeah.
So the operation is irreversible. It's wonderful in the right people, and it can be life changing. But it's also very hard to predict which person is going to regret having had the operation.
Mm.
But I try to avoid people who are already sweating in the back, chest or legs.
Yes.
I try to steer people away from surgery in that area.
Of course. Have you seen people's lives change because of treatment? What's it like, especially with the kids?
It's very gratifying. I'm a heart and a lung surgeon, but my most grateful patients and my biggest wine collection and chockies come from the families of these kids, because you have a shy 12, 14, 16-year-old kid that doesn't want to interact with people. And if you can control their sweating, you have a confident 20-year-old adult at the end of it, which is life-changing, in tears sometimes when you see them, which is really gratifying.
When you don't need that tissue to dab your nose, it would be life-changing. I want to keep talking to you, but we must get to news. Dr. Sharma, thank you so much for coming into the studios. It's been a pleasure. What's your website?
I think if you just Google Perth Sweat Clinic, you'll find a lot of information on sweating there, and if you wish to discuss further, you can always feel free to make an appointment.
Very good. And I can confirm, everyone, he is still not sweating. Very unfair. Dr. Sharma, thank you for your time.
Pleasure.
You've been listening to a Nightlife podcast. For more great conversations about the issues that impact you, as well as features on travel and food, head to the Nightlife webpage. You'll find it at abc.net.au/nightlife. You don't need to be a night owl to enjoy the nightlife.